To the naysayers, social media is little more than a bastion of cat videos and Kardashians. But a growing number of political researchers are peering past the emojis and Candy Crush invitations to examine the important role that Twitter, Facebook and a range of other social media platforms are playing in democracy and also in policy making. Dr. Sarah Bice is from the University of Melbourne and Luca Rickard is an assistant professor at Roskilde University in Denmark. They're joining me both now. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Sarah, I'll start by asking you about Twitter. You've looked at the way in which Twitter is shaped the debate around coal seam gas in Australia. How different do you think public discussion would have been without social media or without Twitter? What has it added to the debate?
One of the things that we see in this research, and over about a year and a half, we've captured 500,000 tweets about the coal seam gas debate in Australia. And we were really a bit skeptical going in, you know, is it just Grumpy Cat, as you say, or is this a more meaningful new platform for public policy? So 500,000 tweets, what are we seeing? One of the key things that we're seeing and one of the game changers around social media in terms of policy participation, when we look at coal seam gas and the places where coal seam gas debates in Australia are most heated or most controversial, they also tend to be in regional or rural communities where we have competing land use. These are agricultural land users, there are vineyards in the Hunter Valley, people who are really concerned about water use. Regional and rural communities have a very difficult time connecting with one another. Social media is allowing these communities who are otherwise quite distant to come together. And we're seeing that through the massive collaborative movement of Lock the Gate. And what's really interesting is not only are these communities becoming connected online, they're also able to organize real-world, real-life protests.
So does that mean that by being able to connect with each other in a way they've never been able to before, using hashtags, I imagine, and you know, mutual interests, that they're able to strengthen their campaign? Is there any evidence that their campaigns have been more successful as a result?
Look, it's really difficult to say, okay, it's more successful because of social media, but given that there's 500,000 tweets, there is a growing population of discussion, and that we've seen things like AGL's write-down of the Hunter Valley project in New South Wales. Now, causality, always a big question mark, but we know that there is increasing protest, and we know that that protest is more cohesive. And I would say that social media, yes, is making a big dent in this area.
Luca, your work looks at how European city councils, you call them city governments, I think,
yes,
are better finding out what they're getting better at what, finding out what their constituents actually want. How is social media and the internet helping local governments to get out of their ivory towers and find that kind of information out?
Yeah, that's right. It's actually an outreach. So you can see it's forming a new way, a new sort of technology that you can use for citizens' outreach. So what we see is actually not a fan page of Copenhagen Municipality. It's actually a community website. So it's a community page for citizens' outreach. And it's not only for motivating citizens to engage in political debates or city developments, it's also an information page. What is going on in the city? What are you getting back for your tax money?
I understand that this was used in the construction of a bike path. Can you tell me that story?
Yeah, so you would know that the Copenhagen bike lanes are very dear to us in Copenhagen.
I know that you love a bike over there, yep.
Yeah, we love a bike and almost everybody has a bike. Four out of five people in Copenhagen owns a bike. So that's a lot. The Copenhagen bike lanes are dear to us, and also the Lord Mayor has this vision that it relates also to reducing the CO2 emission. Less pollution and better health for the people who bike and commute to and from work and to their studies in Copenhagen city center. So we want them to make safe. So safety is high priority in order to have more people bike. So they would ask, so when you bike to and from work, do you experience any places that we can improve? So they should write in with this information. So here you can see that the city governments of Copenhagen is actually gathering all this information from their citizens.
And so they're calling for that information and that advice, if you like, and they're really meaningfully using it. They're not just asking in a tokenistic way.
No, they're really using it. And you could also be using the opportunity to upload pictures of where you think. And of course, they have to prioritize looking at what will it cost us and where to prioritize. But it's really nice to get all this information from your citizens.
Sarah, you note that Twitter can be a powerful force in measuring public debate and sentiment. Can you see a day when this is taken to its logical conclusion and people vote via Twitter, that it's used as a kind of vehicle for democracy?
Yeah, look, I can, because at the Melbourne School of Government Democracy and Transition Conference, which Luca and I are at this week, I was just in a panel yesterday with a researcher from Nigeria, and he was talking about the ways in which citizens in Nigeria, so they now have over 90% mobile phone coverage. So people you might think normally wouldn't have a phone, and I've experienced this myself in Papua New Guinea, mobile phones are everywhere now. And in Nigeria, citizens are using these phones in the election period to raise awareness of their very local issues and local concerns. They're doing that very effectively, and it's putting a lot of pressure on those candidates in the election. So they're not voting yet via social media, but they are certainly beginning to push their own local policy agendas. And I would imagine that through proper security technology, we might one day see social media voting.
How about the difference between, I mean, the two dominant platforms, Twitter and Facebook? Facebook is a much more dominant medium for a lot of people. Twitter has a bit of the problem where it's kind of elites talking to other elites or specialists talking. You mentioned the coal seam gas example before. How does that play out there? Is it just the same kind of dominant voices? Is it the elites, or do you see something different?
It's really interesting. And one of the issues, I suppose, that is important around social media, which is related to this, is security and privacy. So we have all these questions on Twitter, you know, are you the real Mark Latham? Who are you? And I think that that's a real question, not only the elites, but who is it that's actually tweeting and who's participating? We see quite a variety of participation. And indeed, we've got one tweet that we often use, which says, you know, look, I'm not your average tweeter. I'm a grandmother of 11, and I really care about this issue. And I think as social media advances, you know, right now it's fairly new, but in 10 years' time, it'll just be as ubiquitous as texting or as phone calls used to be.
On RN Drive, we're having a bit of a conversation about democracy, e-democracy as it's called, democracy via social media. My two guests are Dr. Sarah Bice, she's from the University of Melbourne, and also Luca Rickard, an assistant professor at Roskilde University in Denmark. I suppose in terms of where it all goes, I'd like it if you could both pull out your respective crystal balls and look 10 years into the future, because the other part of all of this is it changes all the time. You said it's new, but in some ways it's really not, and it's changing very quickly all the time. How is technology shaping the ways governments, citizens and companies participate in democracy, say, in 20 or 30 years' time? What kind of things do you imagine?
I imagine that it's going to be broader, much broader, more technologies, more platforms. And in Denmark and in Copenhagen municipality, we're already working on becoming a smart cities. So we say a smart city is for smart people, but that also includes a smart governance. So it's all about gathering this new forms of data that comes in and actually knowing where to handle it. So I think that is one of the barriers, how the government is going to handle all this data that is going to come.
I wonder if how you'd reflect on that, Sarah, and also if I can pose this, if I can add an extra kind of element to the question. How do you make sure that it maintains its democracy? Because we've seen some groups, if you like, almost spam the system. You know, they're very good at being activists, using the online technologies and making one view seem more dominant than it might really be.
I think that's an excellent question. I appreciate some complexity. One of the issues, though, is social media really making things more complex, or is it necessarily the vehicle that's putting more elite views out there? I'm not sure I'm convinced, because if we think back to the United States and Thomas Jefferson, they created the Electoral College as this kind of, you know, we're going to step in front of the citizenry. And then we have the traditional media argument around, are they radical media? Are they supporting one political party over the other? And I'm not convinced that social media is particularly different to that. What I do see and what I hope is that we will, as more and more people log on, to whatever technology we're offered, we will see this broader base of participation, and we may, I'm an optimist, see a move towards more deliberative democratic processes.
Can you reflect on what deliberate democratic processes might mean or look like?
Yeah, when we talk about deliberative democracy, to use some jargon, we really just mean fully participatory democracy. So things like citizens' juries, where you may have a big issue, it might be bike lanes in Melbourne, and we say, do we want bike lanes? The Melbourne City Council actually had a citizens' jury type experiment earlier, I believe, this year. So you bring in members of the public, it's more representative, they are given the information that they need about whatever issue it is that's on the schedule, and they have a really in-depth conversation and are then invited to provide their recommendations directly back to policy makers. So it's about the citizenry having a very direct and deliberative, that discussion, that informed decision-making process with our policy makers.
Fascinating stuff. Thank you so much to both of you for coming in and having this conversation.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you so much. And that's Sarah Bice and Luca Rickard. They're both joining me. They've both been participating in this Melbourne University Democracy Conference, and they're specifically looking at the way that, you know, social media and the internet is participating in shaping our conversation about democracy.